Michael
podcast.
Bring your friends.
All right, so we're live.
We are live.
We're live.
We're live.
Just the two of us and the DEA or whatever three-letter agency is listening to this.
Yeah, it's everything's tapped.
Which, yeah. Tucker Carlson confirmed that.
Of course.
I've confirmed that too. I talked about that, right?
Yeah,
I talked about working wiretaps.
Yeah, of course.
I have. It's good to see you. I've missed you a lot. For the people that listen, we've been having some technical difficulties with episodes.
Yes.
So you'll notice that episodes have not been popping up.
We've been getting lazy. Just the stuff has not been.
We've had three interviews that unfortunately the audio has come out with a lot of parts that just I can't correct them, unfortunately. And
yeah, when we tried to scrub them,
it just wasn't working. So yeah. I sincerely apologize for that. To everybody listening, please go ahead and hit a like and subscribe on the YouTube channel.
Yes.
Help us grow that channel. We're almost up to 500 subscribers and we're well over the 300,000 mark. So we got about 700,000 more views on that.
Nice.
Other than that, everything has been pretty phenomenal on our end. You'll see that I'm in my interpreting attire because the guest that we have today is actually a CCHI member who has also taken my class, is a really good person.
Well, tell him what
CCHI. Okay, so I think we're gonna let Kelly Enrique go ahead and take the stage now and talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah, so my name is Kelly, and I apologize, I cannot pronounce the Polish last name of mine, like the correct Polish way. So my name is Kelly Gretsch, and my family actually says Henriquez, my husband's family. So I'm just Kelly Gretsch Henriquez. Sorry, I know it's supposed to be Kelly, however you pronounce the Polish one. And
it's not Enriquez. It's not Enriquez.
No.
Like
no Ceseo here.
You shouldn't you have a hyphen?
That's a good interpreting joke. Yeah. That's a really good interpreting joke right there.
Yeah.
So, Kelly, you and I met each other through
interpreting.
Obviously through interpreting, but you and I met each other through like classes, I think, right? I think through trans interpreting classes and whatnot.
I don't think I've actually ever taken a trans interpreting class. I know of trans interpreting. I know
you're here anyway. Oh my god.
I need ay Dios mío. I can't believe she said that. I'm so hurt. No, Kelly teaches her own set of classes, which if people want to get a hold of you before anything, can you give everybody the deets of where they can get a hold of you for interpreting or anything? So in your classes and everything?
Totally. Yeah. So my website is kghinterpretation.com. So it's K as in Kelly, G as in the last name that I cannot pronounce in Polish, and Henriquez, the bastardized English pronunciation of my last name, interpretation.com. That's my website.
Okay. All right.
Let me see if I got this right here, because I want to like make sure everybody has that. That's a pretty good website that you got. Look at that.
Oh, wow.
That's...
There you go.
Resources
for
language.
I'm a web designer and web developer, so I do my website myself.
Ooh, so you translate websites all the time.
Not really.
Oh, man. So, Kelly, can you tell us a little bit about where you grew up at, I'm sorry, and what was it like growing up for you and whatnot? I'd love to hear this.
Ooh, I grew up in the middle of nowhere in the country here in Virginia. I was literally thinking about this earlier. I was going to tell you the county that I grew up in, and you're going to be like, wait, what now? I grew up in Fauquier County, Virginia. That's F-A-U-Q. Fauquier. F-A-U-Q-U-I-E-R, named after Lord Fauquier.
Of course, Lord Fauquier. You've heard him.
I absolutely. I'm aware of Lord Fauquier. You've been with Lord Fauquier a lot in the Navy, I bet. Yeah, I think he served in the Army too. He might have been. He might have a long lineage of Fauquier people that were. Go ahead, Kelly.
Yeah, so it was just very, very. I mentioned the county because the town that I grew up in was literally so small. No one's gonna have ever heard of it. So I grew up in the middle of nowhere in the country, more cows than people. Actually my family is from New England, and my mom's family is from England. So yeah, I just grew up in the middle of nowhere, in the country, and there's really not much to say about it because really not much went on. I didn't grow up speaking Spanish. I'm a Spanish interpreter, but I didn't grow up speaking Spanish, and I didn't really have any exposure to Spanish either.
La gringa, we found her.
Yeah, I'm definitely a gringa.
Does it bother you? Does it bother you?
Spanish then?
Well, hold on, I gotta ask this because does it bother you that people say that? Because I know interpreters who they don't sound like. I'm a white Puerto Rican, obviously, but I know people that they'll be called gringo, and they're like, ugh.
Oh no, I wear it as like. I wouldn't say a mark of pride, but I definitely feel at home with that term. And I refer to myself as a gringa all the time. Totally fine with it.
Go ahead, Eric. Okay. What did you have?
No, well, how did you get into Spanish then in the middle? I mean, didn't you want to be a vet? I mean, with all the cows there or something? I mean...
I actually wanted to be a lawyer growing up. I was a very strange child. I didn't find out I wanted to become an interpreter until I was about, I think, 2021 around there, like 2021. I was actually living in Northern Virginia at that time, and I had a lot of exposure to Spanish speakers, and I was working in food service. So I was working in restaurants where most of the people that I worked with spoke Spanish. If anyone's ever worked in a restaurant, you know kind of how it goes. Oftentimes people who work in the kitchen speak Spanish.
We cook the best food. I mean, can't deny that. That Hispanic people have some of the best food and can cook some of the best food in the world, I think. Like, for sure. I mean, yeah, for sure. So what happened there? You just started picking up?
So French was actually my second language, and I took Spanish. Oui, oui. Oui, oui. Je peux parler un petit peu français, mais c'est tout. I can speak a little bit of French, but that's it.
I'm going to need an interpreter for that one.
I just interpreted it. I can speak a little bit of French, but that's it. Yeah. Or I can interpret it directly into Spanish. I worked at Edible Arrangements. In the kitchen at Edible Arrangements, and I was the only English speaker who worked there. And I was basically there by myself with a bunch of folks who spoke Spanish. And from there, I just kind of had to find a way to communicate with people. And so I started speaking very, very basic Spanish. And then I was kind of like, okay, I'm going to start studying Spanish. I actually had my Nintendo DS. The original Nintendo DS, and I had this game called My Spanish Coach, and I studied like grammar and stuff through that. And French grammar is very similar to Spanish grammar, so that really helped me.
In what sense, if you don't mind me asking, besides the accents?
Well, the accents are very different. I would say. I think the process of learning a language, it's very similar. So, you know, you have verbs and you conjugate the verbs. Those aren't really things that you learn in school when you're learning about English because you already speak it. And then there's a lot of things like, for instance, umbrella in French is, and I'm going to completely slaughter this, is parapluie. Which is stop rain, but in Spanish for umbrella, it's like paraguas, which is stop water. So you have some similar things. Okay.
We call them sombrilla,
Puerto Rico. Yeah, and you have sombrilla too.
Sombrilla because it blocks the sun. Yeah, that's exactly. That's interesting. Yeah, because
there's not a word for umbrella.
No, there is. Because umbrella comes from cover. No, what does mean in Latin? Because brella comes from the term cover, brella, brella. But I don't know what means.
No, it's to stop water.
To stop water.
Yeah, that sounds like a definition.
Paraguas. I like paraguas. Like this is what happens when you put interpreters in a setting, bro.
Oh, I'm just saying. You're gonna start. Sounds like a definition. What's umbrella? It stops water.
Go ahead, Kelly.
I was studying Spanish very informally, and then I ended up working in a pizzeria. I worked there for a couple of years, and I got really close with the people I worked with at the pizzeria. I've actually been back to the pizzeria since, and I'm actually planning on going back again here soon, because they're basically like family to me. But yeah, I was studying like informally, and then I was conversing with my coworkers, and it was really my main man, Jose, who worked within a couple of feet of me for a couple of years. And him and I would just have conversations about random topics in Spanish. And that really helped me expand my vocabulary. And I was fluent in what I like to call street Spanish at that point.
Hello.
There was also a coworker who would kind of pick on my coworker, Jose. And he was a very lazy guy. And that really bothered me. Lazy people really bother me. And Jose was a very hard worker. And so this guy would basically pawn all of his work off on Jose. And so a big part of my like formative experience learning Spanish was defending Jose. So I got really good at yelling at people in Spanish and calling them very
So you have been baptized in Hispanicness. Okay.
All right. A little bit. And then I lived in a Spanish speaking neighborhood in Northern Virginia in the Reston area.
And I gotta ask, you like use your hands when you're yelling, like "Mira carajo, coño, mira, tú sabes." Like, do you start using your hands too? Like, if she does, I'm looking at mine.
I think I do. I can't say I'm looking in a mirror when I'm yelling at people. I think that would be kind of a weird habit to develop. But
yeah,
and
wait, is that weird? I think I know what I need to change.
I will say, though, I did end up going to college to study Spanish because I like to make it clear that I could speak Spanish before I went to college. So I could speak street Spanish. And then I went to college and I learned Spanish grammar, all sorts of stuff. And I studied interpretation and translation. So my degree is my bachelor's is in foreign language with a concentration in Spanish. And I also went through the Spanish English Translation and Interpretation Program at Virginia Commonwealth University.
That's okay. Interesting. Go ahead. I know you have stuff. Go ahead. You've been tapping me.
Why'd you pick the Commonwealth University?
So I always loved Richmond. That's where I live now. I live in Richmond, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And I kind of always knew I wanted to come live here. I had a lot of experiences in Richmond and I really love Richmond. And I knew I was going to eventually move there. And the big university here in Richmond is VCU or Virginia Commonwealth University.
Okay. I was wondering, cause I was stationed in Virginia and there's quite a few, colleges and universities there. So I was just wondering why you picked
where about in Virginia?
Virginia Beach, Norfolk, Chesapeake area.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So like near like Fort Lee.
Yeah, Portsmouth, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
You spent, 15 years there? 10 years, something like that?
Yeah, it was like 11 years, something like that, yeah.
I've never been to Virginia, never. Never been to the state, never driven through it. I have a friend who lives in, actually, Richmond. Actually, yeah, I do. Tyler.
Does he live in Richmond?
Yeah, Tyler does live. I have an Xbox friend that he actually lives in Richmond. That's funny you say that. Okay. I've actually interpreted for some companies there, too. So that's a really, really small world. When you got done with college, how did you start in the business of interpreting? Like, so you graduated college. Did you go get like CCHI or were you like trying to find like how to find work once you got out?
So I was actually very fortunate to go through a university level interpreter training program. It was focused both on legal interpretation and medical interpretation. And I had an internship kind of integrated into my academic career. And so I basically ended college doing multiple internships actually at clinics interpreting. So that's how those are my first experiences interpreting was through my internship program, but all in medical settings. Legal interpreting has always absolutely terrified me. And so I have never pursued legal interpreting.
How I gotta ask because I'm in the spectrum of the legal. What terrifies you about it? Because I'm the reverse. For me, medical interpreting terrifies the ever living shit out of me because there's so much that you have to know. You have to know about physiology, basic biology. You have to know about
You got to know pronouns.
Common diseases. You have to know the pronouns. You have to know, hey, is this that? Is the heart this? How many? No, like, no, there's so much.
I think they're called they.
Shut up. Anyway, so what is it that terrifies you about the medical setting?
The legal setting. You're legal terrified setting. Of the medical setting.
Oh, hell yeah. I won't deny it.
Yeah. So I think for me, medical has always kind of felt home to me. My mom has always worked either in the medical field or adjacent to the medical field. Like she just got her, she's like a health educator now, but she was the head nurse at the small clinic in the town that I grew up in. So I always had exposure to like the medical field. So it's always felt very comfortable to me. My mom was the kind of person where we would see car accidents on the side of the road and we'd be driving and she would have her first aid kit in the back of the car and she'd hop out of the car and I'd be sitting in the car like little 5-year-old Kelly and my mom would like run over and like, you know, do that. So I've always felt very comfortable in medical, but legal for me, my professor, who I'm trying to connect with and meet again, I haven't seen her during the pandemic. I'm going to be meeting with her next week. Maybe she is a federally certified court interpreter and, we went to the court with her a couple of times to watch her interpret and the things that would happen in court were really intimidating. And also for me, it was the fact that, you know, someone could get arrested or someone could end up going to court for something small, like running a red light. But then if they're undocumented, then it can turn into this whole thing. And I just didn't want to have any part in that. I wanted to be able to sleep with myself at night. And I didn't want to be kind of that cog in the machine where when someone's getting majorly, am I allowed to curse? We curse on here, right?
Oh, you can. Yeah. It's funny because you're, I feel like you're attacking me right now with everything you're saying because Eric keeps looking at me like, is she talking about you?
Is she describing you?
She's describing you, bro.
I don't.
You know how many people he's deported? It's amazing.
I am not deported. I just want to make this clear right here. The following statements have not deported anybody. Nobody. Go ahead, okay. Kelly. No, you can cuss. You're fine.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Because I actually swear like a sailor. So which I don't normally portray. So I'm glad to be on here. So I just don't want to be part of someone's life and part of that process when they're getting fucked up the ass by the legal system.
Because no, I that understand
in the medical and field too.
Well, hold on. I get what you're saying because we were just having this conversation yesterday. Yeah. A very similar conversation about because you know as well as you know my background. It's in trafficking and drugs and stuff like that, and that's one of the things that I stopped doing those cases. The moment that I started feeling like, oh, this is a game to you people. Like, oh, this person has information. It doesn't matter that they did all these terrible things to these kids, but they have information for me to seek the next person. So we're going to work out a deal. Yeah, that's one of the things that has bothered me a lot over the years. And I think that's why I stopped doing court interpreting and people have asked me. And that's one of the main reasons you describe it, because at night it just bothered me. It really bothered me. And if you can't separate, you have to be a little soulless, like kind of like an attorney, you know? So that's just, you can quote me on that one. Kind of like an attorney. You have to be a little soulless when it comes to those things. But that's interesting because like medical interpreting scares me because of the amount of things that can occur. And coming from the legal setting, you don't really get told much other than show up to room 101 at 10 a.m., and you're going to sit there until the docket gets called. Whereas in my experience with the little bit of medical that I've done, because you and I have been talking, I've been doing AD. Is it AD HOC? What's it called? When it's an interpreter that's trained but not certified and it's the only last option, I think.
Ad hoc.
Yeah, ad hoc. Okay. I said AD HOC. I don't know. I was trying to say ACDC, I think.
Yeah.
So ad hoc. And I've been doing it with podiatry meetings, which... I took a 6-hour class on that to feel prepared. And it feels like also in medical interpreting, one of the things that I love is you can be a little bit humane, right? If you see something messed up, you can't do that. Can you explain that, Kelly? Because I think you can explain that way better than me. I have a hard time explaining that.
This is a hot topic in the interpreting world. So that would be advocacy. Now, in the context of medical interpreting, advocacy has a very narrow definition. It's a very specific set of things that have to happen in order for something to be considered advocacy. So you have to be speaking up on behalf of someone, and you have to try to convince the person with the authority to solve that problem to solve the problem. So the example that's given by the NCIHC, which is the National Council on Interpreting Healthcare, is a patient has an intravenous port, and it's in their left arm and they're getting their blood pressure taken on their arm. You can intervene. If let's say you let the nurse know, excuse me, this is the interpreter speaking. I just wanted to let you know that the patient has, I believe the patient has an intravenous port in their arm and they cannot get their blood pressure taken on that arm. That's not advocacy. But then once the nurse starts pumping the blood pressure cuff and you go, no, stop. The patient cannot have their blood pressure taken on that arm. You need to stop right now. That would be advocacy. And you're totally right. You can't do that in a legal setting.
That's funny because in the legal setting, we call that exigent circumstances. And I teach this a lot when I explain it. Exigent circumstances is basically like life, sight, or limb. If someone's about to lose their life, their sight, or a limb, or something fatal is going to happen, you can intervene as the interpreter, which in the setting, go ahead.
I did have a question. Could you medical and you have to deal with a lot of Latin phrases or Latin words? Does that cause you any problems from Latin to Spanish or even to English?
If anything, it helps because Spanish is also a Latin-based language. So for instance, a lot of times, even if I've never looked a word up, I will know how to interpret it because as long as you know the rules for how, let's say we take something from Latin and adapt it into English. And then if you know the same rules for Spanish, as long as you know the prefix, the root, and the suffix, you can usually interpret those words. But typically if someone says like a Latin word, like let's say someone says et cetera, which I believe is a Latin word, I believe. I'm not a Latin interpreter, okay? I don't think those exist. But anyways, if someone were to say et cetera, I would just repeat et cetera. Just like if someone says hors d'oeuvres, right? Which that's not how you pronounce it in French. But if someone says hors d'oeuvres, I would just keep it the same because I don't interpret French. I interpret Spanish and English.
Okay. I was just wondering because there are some jargons and phrases in the medical field that are Latin. So I didn't know if that had a, was any problems or caused any confusion because one word can change a whole sentence.
For sure.
It's like the difference between envenenado y borracho or embriagado.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
You care to touch upon that? Because I was a subject matter expert on a case on that, but I can't comment much on it. Can you explain what the difference is and what fatally can occur if someone doesn't get that right?
Yes. So there's the famous Willie Ramirez case where, now I don't know the full details of the story. I haven't read the book. I know there's a book about it, but basically there was a confusion between what was the specific term?
Emborrachado envenenado. There was a confusion between poisoned and drunk. But the words that were
intoxicated. So depending on who you talk to, so that would be considered like a partial cognate, I would say, between English and Spanish, because it depends on who you talk to. Every time I teach one of my classes where we go over that example, and I always have at least like a dozen Spanish interpreters there, I ask them, what does intoxicado mean to you? And most say that intoxicado to them means that someone was like poisoned or food poisoned. And then some people do say to them, it means like intoxicated, like they're drunk or they're under the influence of something. Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing too, that's really tricky when you interpret Spanish, is that there are so many different meanings for one word in a lot of cases, depending upon where someone's from. And then for different concepts like drinking straw, there's like 14 different words in Spanish for drinking straw. But in the particular case of Willie Ramirez, because of that misunderstanding, he ended up becoming paraplegic because they thought, oh, he's just drunk. I think they set him up on just a regular like IV drip.
But from my
understanding, they didn't rely on the services of an interpreter in that case.
If I recall correctly, it was a sort of non-trained interpreter, which was a family member or a friend mm-hmm. who had interpreted. And this person, like, it was catastrophic, like, what happened.
I've seen it really young.
And that's why it's like, the reason Eric asked that question is because I'm a real asshole when it comes to, like, no, that's not what you're trying to say. Like, don't use a word. And Eric's really good because Eric's brilliant. But Eric's seen me when someone says something and I go, that's not what you're trying to ask me. Because if you were trying to ask me this, you get what I'm saying, right? So that's one of the reasons why I bring that up, is because I think people, and this is a question that I have for you, I have a hard time explaining to people how challenging it is to stay up to date with trends as an interpreter, especially if you've been doing this for over 10 years. How do you tackle that when people try to like check you? Because I'll tell you why in a minute why. But how do you tackle that challenge when people just are like, I can just use Google Translate?
Oh, gosh.
I gave her PTSD here. Hold on. Actually, let me tell you. I'll give you this, right? I'll lighten the mood, back. Right?
Yeah.
So yesterday I was a couple of weeks ago, I was interpreting at a hospital, right?
Yeah,
at a hospital. And made it very clear. I said, hey, I'm an ad hoc interpreter. Not I'm trained, but what is it that it is? Oh, we need to do like an initial workers comp test. I'm like, workers comp. I've done that, done hundreds of those, no problem. When I get there, what they didn't tell me is that it was an initial screening for a workers comp case, which if you've never done a workers comp case, an initial screening basically takes forever because they're checking everything in your medical history, right?
Oh, okay.
Luckily they had done like some of that already. So this was like more of like, hey, let me see what the issue is. And they're doing MRIs, right? And when we get done with the MRIs, we go to another room, and you know how it is. You walk adjacent to the provider, never stay alone with the person. Mm-hmm. And when I step outside from the room, the nurse says, oh my God, this is so impressive. She's like, where do you keep your machine? And I'm like, the machine, like what machine? I'm confused because I also didn't have my notepad. My notepad was in my pocket because mm-hmm. I only pull out my notepad if like when the doctor walks in, it's going to be a long, then I start taking notes so I can refresh. And she goes, yeah, your little translating machine. That way you can tell me what it says. And I'm like, what? Like people do that? She goes, oh yeah, we get interpreters that come in and they just pull out the machine. They put their heads in and then they tell me what it says. And then they give the person the machine. She's like, where's your machine? And I looked at her in the face and I said, I am the machine. What are you talking about? Like, look at her. She's like, so dude, I'm waiting for Bert Kreischer to give me like a cease and desist after saying that. Cause I was so mad. I got home and I was like, this fucking nurse. And I'm telling, like, I told him and he started laughing. And I'm like, I got to share this with somebody. So, yeah, I have been asked, where's the machine? So, apparently, allegedly, there's people who are out there just going around with headphones and Google Translate machines and going into medical settings and doing this shit.
And I imagine that's not HIPAA compliant. I imagine all that.
It's not because anything that you enter into Google automatically violates an NDA, because Google Translate is a data collecting app.
That's how Google makes their money. Google offers all these free services.
You mean the CIA?
I'm in my mind at these interpreters who go around telling other people, oh yeah, just turn on auto captions in Google Chrome while you're interpreting and it'll help you interpret. And it's like, no, that is not HIPAA compliant.
What?
No.
Wait. Hold on. Go back. Say that. Wait, explain that one to me. I got to hear this one. What?
There is a very popular video on YouTube, and this interpreter from a particular interpreting company suggested that people turn on auto captions in Google Chrome when they're interpreting. let's say if they're doing video interpreting or they're doing over the phone interpreting through an online platform to turn on auto captions. And so I actually went and I checked Google's like Chrome's like privacy policy, data usage policy, all that stuff to see if it stores that data in any way, shape or form. And I mean, Google is just so shady about how they use and disclose our information. And so obviously there's nothing there that tells me one way or another, but you can assume pretty much because the way that Google makes their money by providing us all these free services is by selling our data that they save. So, and I confronted this interpreter and I was just like, please, like, you can't be suggesting this to people. This is not HIPAA compliant. And you're suggesting this to medical interpreters. And they were like, thank you. I'll take it in consideration. So like the views are more important to that person, clearly.
Thank you. I'll take it in consideration. I know who that person is and I'm not going to say their name, but I will give him a chance to come to the podcast and be like, you're fucking stupid for saying that. Yeah. Like I want to make this very clear. I know who this person is and I pulled it up and I'll give them the chance to come and rectify themselves on the podcast because that's ridiculous to me. Not only are you violating HIPAA to the, I mean, Kelly, you know more about HIPAA than I do. That's a clear HIPAA violation. Like, you're sharing information outside of the normal sources as you are a provider. And then not only that, but you're full of shit. Like,
that data about that appointment. Imagine you go to a doctor's appointment and you're discussing something with your doctor. Most of the time, they're very private matters. And, you know, you don't want that information just saved somewhere or shared with who knows what. You have to be very, very careful. I even tell people about this. Like if you're taking notes and like, let's say you have an iPad and you're taking notes in your iPad or you have a non-Apple tablet and you're writing something in Microsoft Word. If you type something into Microsoft Word, and I checked Microsoft about this, if you type something into Microsoft Word, even if you don't save it, it will save a temporary copy of that file and it is entirely possible for that temporary file to be uploaded to the cloud. Unless you have a business associate agreement with Microsoft Office 365, Microsoft Office, you can't even type something from a medical appointment into a Google document because that is a HIPAA violation.
That's why they have. Well, that's why I have those. You can't
do that with the courts either because you're usually talking with your client and the lawyer.
The court depends because there's NDAs. Like HIPAA and NDA, people get this confused, but I get what you're trying to say, but it's completely different because, for example, as a legal interpreter, if and I'll put us up here, if Kelly is the LEP, right? Limited English person, limited English people, however the fuck you want to say it.
Okay.
And I'm talking to you, right?
Yeah.
And there's an NDA involved, or you're the attorney for her. Mm-hmm. And I'm the interpreter. If you start talking to her in Spanish, I walk away because attorney, whatever protection,
privilege. That's what I was talking about.
So with HIPAA, the problem is the computer's doing the same thing. You're not supposed to put that information in there because XYZ things. Not only that, but like, dude, that's how information gets out. Next thing you know, everybody knows that person has a tiny dick or something like that. Like, it's a bad way to like. I hate to use that analogy, but it's just the funniest thing that came to my mind. Yeah, I didn't know that person was saying that. That's interesting.
Yeah, the reason I brought it up about doing the different mixing the words up is because they actually had, I think it was 1881, something like that. The Texas Rangers going to arrest this guy, and they spoke to him in Spanish and said, "Did you buy a horse?" And what they said in Spanish was, "Did you buy a mare?" Which is a female horse.
Yeah, that's completely different.
And he said, no. He said, well, you're lying because you bought that horse. Well, it wasn't a mare. So they tried to arrest him because they thought he stole a horse, didn't buy a horse. He goes, did you buy a mare? He's like, no. So, and there's a whole movie on it, and he obviously didn't want to get arrested because.
I'll give you one better that Kelly probably knows because I've taught this.
I just thought that with just that one word, he's like, nope, I didn't do that.
Miranda rights.
Yeah.
You can't Google translate Miranda rights. If you Google translate Miranda rights, your case is automatically null and void. Yeah. The problem is most people won't go through with it or won't appeal it. But if you appeal that all the way up, which it has been before, California, they had an issue when a man that they pulled over that had, and I shit you not, I never forget this, had cocaine, had weed, had pills, and had guns.
So he's ready to party.
He sued the department because they used Google Translate during a fucking traffic stop. I am during not. Hold on. I kid you not. California.
No, not kidding. And then there have been studies ruling that Google Translate is not suitable for like discharge instructions at hospitals, even though some hospitals use Google Translate. I've seen it happen. It's scary. I've seen providers use Google Translate to speak to patients before. And I'm not kidding.
While you're in the room?
Well, it was, these are for other patients. Like, let's say one instance I was interpreting for inpatient rehab. For a patient who had literally, I'm not sure if they had a stroke or what have you, but I heard the physical therapist using Google Translate to give the patient who was a fall risk instructions on like moving. And it was interpreting it. Move it over here. Move it over here. It. Well, I mean, how would you interpret it? How would you say the word it?
It depends on the context.
Exactly.
Exactly. It depends also too on the gender of the thing that you're moving. Are you moving your leg? Oh
yeah, because it, the gender. Yeah.
Or are you moving your arm, your brazo? That's masculine. So
yeah,
that's true. Yeah, and so it was giving it was randomly assigning genders to the it, and so the patient was getting really confused. And I was just like, excuse me. You cannot be doing this. You cannot. This is, you have to use a qualified interpreter under Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act. You have to use a qualified interpreter. Google Translate is not a qualified interpreter. And she was like, well, we don't have an interpreter for this patient today. And I'm like, okay, but your hospital should have plan A, plan B, plan C. So if you have that hospital relied upon contract in-person interpreters, if you don't have a contract in-person interpreter for a patient, you better have a phone to pick up to call the interpreting agency to get someone on the line. You better have an interpreting cart to pull over to you to get an interpreter on the line. And it's in Spanish. It's not.
That's federal law.
Yeah, it is federal law.
That's federal law. Section, Title 6, Executive Order 13166.
Yeah. Yeah.
I teach
six,
that.
You, right after 1964, Executive Order 13166, not to be confused with Order 66, which ordered the extermination of the Jedi.
Very different. Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Eric's learning so much. What's funny is I got that from her. I know you know what that is. I know you didn't know what 13166 was. It's funny because I got that from you. And now every class that I teach, the first 5 minutes is my intro, and then another 5 minutes is why we need interpreters. If you receive federal funding under Title 6, which Title 6 is discrimination. Right, discrimination.
Title 6 is civil the rights. Discrimination civil, clause of the Civil Rights Act.
Right, and I do, and every time I get people join my class, I swear to you, I'll see like two people join, and then after 10 minutes, you see 15 people join. I go, you motherfuckers, you all know what I'm talking about the first 10 minutes, but it's because most people don't know that you want to make attorneys, dude. I said this on an interview that I did with a guy named Ian Bick. I said it. I said, you want to see how you make a bunch of attorneys rich, like filthy rich? Go to the hospitals. Attorneys would be rich. Attorneys would be richer than Conor McGregor if they just went to schools, hospitals. I've never seen it done in the court. The courts have been really good, at least the courts. And I've been to like a few courts in different states. But you want to make attorneys rich? Bro, do that.
Well, is there a state law equivalent?
What do you mean a state law?
Because some of them get federal fund. No, if you get federal funding, if you don't get federal funding, you're just sponsored by the state.
Well, hold on. If you get, and correct me if I'm wrong, Kelly, if you take Medicaid, Humana, or Kelly, ¿cuál es el otro? What's the other one named?
Medicare.
Thank you.
Medicare. Okay.
Humana, all those, right? That's technically government aid.
Yeah, that's like my litmus test. I can't find out if you have grants. I can't find out, like, if your hospital has grants. I can't find out any of that stuff. But very, very easy to find out if you accept Medicaid or Medicare.
Okay.
It's you take a Medicaid.
That I believe is Medicare Part B. But
I think it's Part B. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not for that particular patient. It's if you accept one penny of money, that means it's baked in like language.
The first paragraph of 13166 makes it very specific.
Okay.
The problem.
They have state parks. They don't get federal funding.
Yeah, but it's a completely different conversation. Yeah, I get the comparison, but it's night and day. It's apples and oranges. It's okay. Men and women. Okay. It's you know, children and adults. It's night and day. That's a different comparison.
Okay.
I will say though, to your point of, you know, federal versus state funding and state laws, it is super, super, because I've done tons of like presentations and things on like, how do we address this non-compliance with language access laws? And one of the suggestions that, you know, I always give is to pass state level legislation that kind of reflects mm-hmm. what the federal level legislation says and does, because the thing is every time we have a change in administration at a federal level, they instate their own director of the Department of Health and Human Services. And then mm-hmm. they can change the implementation of these pieces of legislation, like Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act, which mandates the use of qualified interpreters for covered entities under Section 1557, which also addresses companion interpreters that minors should never interpret, but we know that happens.
Say that. Hold on. Can you say that one again a little louder for the people in the back? Just
absolutely.
For me.
Absolutely. Minors, so children under the age of 18, cannot be relied upon as interpreters except temporarily in cases of emergency. And I once had a hospital emergency room trying to tell me that, oh, well, because it's an emergency room, every case that comes in here is an emergency. Therefore, we can use children as interpreters whenever we want. Yes, I've had a local hospital tell me that. And the response to that is not an example of an emergency. An emergency is daughter under the age of 18, father get in a car accident. Daughter is okay. Dad is hurt. They arrive in the ambulance. The EMTs jump out of the back and they pull out their interpreting tablet, but they have no signal. Okay, you can temporarily rely upon that child as an interpreter until you get dad to the hospital. Then you, once you're in a situation where you have a qualified interpreter available, you need to use a qualified interpreter.
Now, I'm going to say, if you're in the hospital, it shouldn't be an emergency. I mean, you go in the emergency room, but...
That's why you have something called VRI, which, by the way, Kelly, you'll get a kick out of this. People over here call that virtual reality interpreter.
Yeah.
Kelly, I will make a phone call right now and tell and ask someone. They'll be like, do you guys have VRI interpreters? By the way, the virtual reality people. That's what they call us.
Because we're not real.
They got Google Translate, Kelly. What are you talking about, bro?
But so, they just set up a webcam and boom.
But that's one of the ways that you can do it. I've done that. The Sicario case. I've talked about that. The guy claimed he was a Sicario, had cuts. They didn't have anybody. They had no other interpreter that had a security clearance. They had no other interpreter. They called me. Mm-hmm. I sat down with the attorney, explained to him, hey, my medical knowledge is this much. Yeah. Let's keep it within here. But it was for a legal reason because there was an interrogation that was going to be conducted. Mm-hmm. So that's an example. The problem you have is that people don't understand the repercussions because no one is doing it. Because no one has paid attention to it. We pay too much attention to other shit where you want to make attorneys rich. Mm-hmm. Bro, go to a hospital. Go to a hospital, sit there for a few hours. And at some point, you'll hear a provider going, hola, como se llama? Me llamo Dr. Talasito. Ha, ha, ha.
That's another problem, too, is that there's nothing in the law that says that specifically
this will happen.
Medical providers, like there's no like proficiency requirements for medical providers. So there's requirements for interpreters, but technically it gives way too much power to the medical providers, because when it comes to like companion interpreters as well, so like friends or family interpreting adults interpreting for a patient, which we know is very commonly takes place. It says that the medical provider basically has the last word, that they can determine whether that person's language proficiency is enough to interpret for their family member, whether, you know, they should consider whether they're biased or not. How can you even determine what someone's biases are if they're talking to the other person in Spanish and you don't know any Spanish? So it's almost like the law gives these providers too much power in these situations to make linguistic decisions without having any linguistic knowledge whatsoever.
I'll give you a prime example. One of my favorite things that happened to me was the doctor's like, they speak English. And I said, okay, I'll just stay here just in case because I'm still getting paid for my time. Mm-hmm. And I'm more of an asshole when it comes to things, but I like to see things play out. And what ends up happening is they start talking, and you know how it is. Some people understand a little bit of English, mm-hmm. and some people understand English. Like, yeah. we can have a global conversation, right?
Yeah.
We can all agree on that, right? Yeah. If you have context, right, which is one of the most important things, language or, mm-hmm. you know, understanding of the language. And then on top of that, you also understand the culture of it, right? Because you have to understand culture, language, and context. Those are the three things you need to be effective mm-hmm. as an interpreter. Kelly, am I right so far?
I mean, I think you need more than those three things, but...
Well, but the most basic of things that you need for you to be able to tell this person effectively and safely yeah. what's going on, right? I know of doctors that they think that their 4 years of high school is more than enough. How would you feel if I told you, Eric, I'm about to perform open heart surgery on you. It's going to be all right. Kelly has seen enough ER that she's going to be the anesthesiologist, mm-hmm. and I've watched it for 4 years. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, I agree with the culture thing because I was in Puerto Rico.
Oh, yes.
Because I tried to learn Spanish in Puerto Rico. You can't do that. You can't learn Spanish in Puerto Rico.
You can learn Spanish in Puerto Rico.
You can learn Puerto Rican Spanish in Puerto Rico.
What did you say, Kelly? What did you
say? I said you can learn Spanish in Puerto Rico, but you're going to learn a very particular flavor of Spanish.
Yeah, I was trying to learn from a book, and then I'd try it out in town, and they looked at me like,
my favorite thing is I had a provider he needed like a picture for my interpreting profile, and I'm like, yeah man, it's no problem. And when I send a picture, he goes, is that really you? I go, yeah, that's me. He goes, bro, you're whiter than el hijo del lechero. You laugh because you know what that means. For the people listening, el hijo del lechero is the milkman's kid. Like, you're whiter than the milkman's kid. And it's like, when I talk in Spanish, like, people don't get it.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, man, like, you get people like that. And it's all cultural, too, because, like, Spanish has so many dialects mm-hmm. that I think after, like, 20-something, I lose count. But it's one of those things that it's like, you also have to understand. I always struggle with this, and here's a question for you. How do you try to explain to people that, like for me, for example, I've been doing it for a while, like, I'm aware of, like, if I'm talking with someone from Mexico, right, I'm not going to use Guatemala slang, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm talking from someone from Mexico, I'm not going to use Dominican Republic slang, right? How do you normally, yeah, I love what she says that. How do you normally explain that to people yourself whenever you run into these questions?
I don't typically explain it to people. It's one of those things that just kind of happens when I interpret. It's very interesting because I find that it automatically happens. Like, if I'm interpreting for someone from Mexico, I'm going to completely change some of the words that I'm using when I'm interpreting. Mm-hmm. I do interpret mm-hmm. a lot for pediatrics, and I'm really blessed to interpret for a lot of children directly, like young children, in mm-hmm. speech therapy, occupational therapy. And in those situations, I do sometimes have to explain to the providers that if I don't know where the parents are from, which sometimes they might say three words to me and there's no way I can glean from that where they're from. Mm-hmm. If I get that child back in the room, it's me, the speech therapist, and the child. And then they're like, show me the drink with the straw. I'm like, oh God, this child is only going to know the word that their parents use. Yeah. So I usually tell the provider, I'm like, hey, excuse me, this is the interpreter speaking. I don't know which word the parents use for drinking straw. There's about 14 different words in Spanish for drinking straw. Mm-hmm. And they'll be like, oh, okay then. Now they might have a workaround. Sometimes they might have a drink that has a straw and ice in it, and a drink that has a straw, no straw and no ice. And then they'll be like, oh, show me the drink with the ice in it. Ice is a lot easier. I just say hielo, and then they'll know what I'm talking about. But unless I know where their parents are from or what words their parents mm-hmm. uses, I typically won't interpret that question unless the provider wants me to try. But if we're doing a standardized test, I'm not going to try. But like, if they're kind of like, oh, well, it's not standardized because the child's bilingual. Why don't you try asking with, you know, am I? And then I kind of have to just be like, okay, I'll just use sorbete. and I use sorbete and the kid doesn't understand. So at that point, we can't assume that that child doesn't conceptually know what a straw is. I just might not have used the right word. So that's probably the only situation where I have to explain it in my experience. Well,
there's a lot of dialects in English too.
For sure.
Scottish, Irish, you got the actual English, and then you got people in Texas. Somebody from New York talks differently. No, really?
Boston. Give me the car.
Yeah.
I can't pick it up. Not to pay. Oh, the card?
Yeah.
You mean the card?
Yeah.
Like the card?
You say, where's the cat?
It's interesting it's you say that.
But, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because, you know, me playing video games, one of the things that that I run into video games a lot is like the Hispanic community is out now a lot, like playing. Like I play a game called Remnant, right? I won't bore you with the details. It's an RPG. And sometimes this is the fun part of being an interpreter, I think, is sometimes I'll be in a chat, right? And I'll be like, hey guys, how's it going? You know, good morning, good afternoon. Ay, pues yo no entiendo, güey, ¿qué dice el güero? And I'm like, oh, I'm about to have some fun. And this is like just something I like to do as an interpreter. I don't know if any other interpreter that listens to this. I know I asked Mireya. Mireya's like, I can't do it. And Mireya is so sweet. Shout out to Mireya from Brand the Interpreter. I'll start going, what did you say? Is that Spanglish? Like, what is that? Oh, bro, I will take them down through a hole. And then as soon as I go, it was no mama's way. And you just hear the excitement, like, hey, like it's dude, yeah. Being an interpreter is fun, man. It's probably one of the most funnest professions, especially if you're an introverted, because you can't really talk to the interpreter.
Yeah.
Like you can't. You have to just pretend like I'm not there. Like I am literally the fucking machine in that aspect.
Yeah.
So
yeah, Kelly, you were explaining that because they had to talk to the patient even though you're standing next to the patient.
Yes. Kelly, a question for you. Maybe you can help clarify for the listeners. Why is it that because I And this is just me not being intelligent enough to explain it. Why is it that they can't talk to us, right? Like, because we do everything is like, we don't go, she said that you're an asshole. He said that you can go, blah, blah, blah. Like, can you elaborate as to why is it that we talk like that?
So the reason why we interpret by default in first person. So when someone says, you know, my hand hurts, you interpret it as my hand hurts. One, it encourages that direct communication. And two, there's also the cognitive processing that goes with it. We're not supposed to filter the message first off. We're just supposed to be accurate. But once we start switching around the message, like my hand hurts, you do a little bit of mental calculating in your head to go, his hand hurts. Also too, if you don't know that person's pronouns, that might be a challenge. But that it might seem like a small bit of cognitive processing there to change that. But then when you're doing it a lot and already the amount of cognitive processing that you're engaging in when you're interpreting, it just exponentially increases. So it can create mental fatigue. It can cause you to be inaccurate when you're interpreting. Though I will say that when I'm interpreting for young children, if the speech therapist says, touch my nose, I'm not going to say touch my nose because then the kid's going to touch my nose. So typically, I will let the provider know in my pre-session, like, which is kind of like the little introduction I give when I first interpret for someone. I let them know I will be interpreting in first person, but I understand little Billy is 2 years old. And if you say touch my nose, if you could say touch the doctor's nose or touch Miss so-and-so's nose, then that I will interpret that, or I might interrupt them if they say touch my nose. I'll be like, excuse me, this is the interpreter speaking. Would you like me to interpret this in third person? And then I'll follow their instructions from there.
Yeah. That's one thing that I did with kids a lot is it was more communicating the idea of the message instead of communicating a message verbatim. And a lot of people didn't understand that. It's like, you know, you can't, especially, you know, the type of kids that I dealt with, like you have to explain it. And again, this is when I always say you can have the best interpreter in the world, but if you don't know how to utilize an interpreter, you're SOL, like you're shit out of luck. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem that a lot of providers have. What are some things that you do to help providers be able to utilize you to the maximum of your abilities?
I interject constantly if they're not getting it. I'll be like, excuse me, this is the interpreter speaking. And I like to phrase things in the, I would be happy to X if you would Y. I have come up against a lot of resistance with providers. It's kind of like I'm almost just a box that they want to check, and they just want to get me out of the room. They don't want me to be there. There's, you know, almost kind of like a power struggle, it feels like. So I found that being super, super kind and polite and saying, I would be happy to X if you would Y, they take it better than me telling them, you know, no, you can't do that, or no, you need to do this. I think it's all in the way that you phrase it. And so just doing that, and also too, positioning plays a big role, because oftentimes I'll be, oh gosh, I have my patient here. A student gave me this. I'm sorry, my camera's blurring it out, but it seems like I have a very profane teddy bear here.
It does.
But sometimes
I'm like, what is that teddy bear doing that we're blurring it? I don't know. Am I on the right website? Like, okay, come on.
But you know, we'll just pretend the teddy bear is the patient and I'm the doctor and y'all are the interpreters. We'll pretend you're the interpreter. Mm-hmm. The doctor will be like looking at you, the interpreter, and going, can you tell him to take his medication?
Oh God, that irritates
me. Tell him to take his medication.
Oh, so, that irritates the fuck out of me.
So many reasons why that's problematic. So, like,
that's a human being right there. You can talk to that person as a human being. Yeah. You don't need to treat me as a human being. This is why I do this job, because I don't want you to talk to me. Just go talk to that fucking person.
No, yeah. Is that pretty standard where you go, this is the interpreter speaking? Or do you and do you have to go?
It's a good question.
This is the patient speaking before you. Do you have to do that to make sure they know that who is actually you're talking to?
So if the patient says my hand hurts, I will interpret my hand hurts. So it's pretty clear to the people who are observing and listening that it's the patient speaking, because the patient just said something and then I immediately said something after that. It's assumed that when someone says something and the interpreter speaks after that person, that interpreter is interpreting. So whenever I'm speaking in my own voice, I have to clearly identify myself as the interpreter. So I can make it clear that it's the interpreter speaking, not someone else. Because otherwise they might think that I'm adding on to a previous interpretation, or that maybe the patient said something when they weren't paying attention. And then of course I would interpret that interjection for full transparency to make sure they don't think I'm having a side conversation with someone.
Okay.
Which you should not. If anyone asks in the comment sections, no, you should not have a conversation about the game over the weekend or your wife or your friends. No, you shut your fucking mouth. Mm-hmm. You're there to interpret. You don't talk. You don't do anything. You talk when someone speaks to you, or if you need to be there to explain something. That's about it.
Say for me personally, I take a little bit of a different approach when I'm in the room, like if it's a patient and the provider and it's the encounter. During that encounter, yes, I'm very, very strict, and I definitely do stick to very rigid rules. But if I'm in the waiting room and the patient is also in the waiting room, typically when I arrive to the healthcare facility, because I'm an in-person interpreter, I let reception staff know that I'm there. I usually say, you know, hi, I'm Kelly. I'm the Spanish interpreter today for Billy Ramirez. And then I interpret a lot for parents and children. And I will actually approach them if they're indicated to me and let them know that I'm their interpreter. Mm-hmm. I'll say, hi, I'm Kelly. I'm your interpreter. I'll say it in Spanish. You know, hi, I'm Kelly. I'm your interpreter today. I'm here for, and then if I have the parent's name, if I have the child's name, I'll be like, I'm here to interpret for little Billy today. And if they say, oh, thank you so much, nice weather we're having today, I'll usually be like, oh yeah, it is nice, isn't it? And I'll sit close enough to them to where if they need me, I can kind of run up and follow them, but also far enough away from them, typically, if possible, because sometimes waiting rooms are very full and there's nowhere else for me to sit except for next to that person. I will sit close enough to be available, far enough away to try and discourage conversation. But that's a public area.
Okay. Do you ever have that? You come up and you say, I'm the interpreter, and the person goes, that's no bueno.
So I'm assuming
you don't look Spanish and you say I'm the Spanish interpreter.
That's the question you were trying to ask. I get it now. Yeah. I get why you're asking that now.
So what you're saying is,
because we don't look
you know, yeah, you look Spanish and you say you're a Spanish interpreter, do you get, does the patient go like, no, you're not?
I have an answer for that, but I like to hear Kaylee's first, because I think mine is not very PG.
I've never had that happen, like introducing myself like that. Usually people kind of like give me a weird look. It's kind of like the same look when I go into the tiendas and I get my pupusas and people are like looking at me like I'm an alien. They look at me like I'm an alien.
And then she goes, mira, mira, dame tres. And they're like, oh, Dios mío, what is this?
Cabrón. Okay.
Yeah. They start making their cross signs. They start making their cross
signs. But there was one person I've interpreted for, and it was actually through the course of, it was close to the end of the appointment. They said something very, very simple. Like I'm talking three words, and I interpreted it, and it was so basic to the point that even the provider knew I interpreted it correctly. And then the person who I was interpreting for said, that's not what I said in English. And I just interpreted what they said. That's not what I said. I didn't interpret it actually because they said it in English to the provider and I didn't have to interpret into Spanish for the provider. But then they started basically complaining about me to the provider in Spanish and I interpreted their complaint about me, which basically was that they didn't like me because I'm clearly not a native Spanish speaker, but they were clearly confident enough in my interpreting abilities to talk at the provider in Spanish about how my Spanish abilities weren't good enough and let me interpret it. So I kind of just left it at, okay, you know.
Hold on, say that again. Hold on. They were, I don't think you understand how funny that is. So wait, they were,
you're speaking Spanish.
You caught it because you're laughing at the same time. I don't think she gets how funny that is. So they were okay.
Arguing in Spanish.
Yeah, they were okay. Were you arguing? But they were while you were interpreting. So they're going, no, esa persona no es. And you're like, no, this person is not the right thing. And they're bitching while you're.
Oh, yeah.
Oh God!
Because the mark of professionalism is if you're gonna be talking to someone in Spanish, I still have to maintain transparency and be accurate and interpret accurately. And what's the best defense against what you just said about me that I didn't interpret what you said accurately to continue interpreting accurately? Yeah. Right?
I interpreted accurately your bitchiness, yes. Your complaint.
Yeah. 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 And I also
said I'm a piece of shit. That's what he said. He says he's not going to have a gringo interpreter. That's what he said.
I mean, that's exactly what they said. But that's kind of the drift that I
got.
And, you know, my kind of philosophy is all things with empathy, which I'm not sure how that flies with y'all, but my personal philosophy, yeah.
Burn it all.
Yeah. So I thought to myself, you know, instead of getting personally offended, like, how dare you, like, insult my abilities, and take it personally, I just kind of said to myself, like, wow, that person has to have had so many negative experiences with Americans, with English speakers, with potentially English speakers, Americans trying to speak Spanish, to where they felt so strongly about me, even though they don't know me.
With the machine too. Remember, they probably had a machine too. That's what they were missing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So yeah, we got wrapped up. I went up to the provider and I said, you know, because they had already left, the person I was interpreting for, the person with limited English proficiency, had already left. And so I had a word with the provider. I was like, hey, I think moving forward, I'm actually going to remove myself from this case because I was scheduled to interpret for them repeatedly in the future. I said, I think it would be best if I didn't interpret for this person anymore because it's clear that they don't want me as their interpreter. And they actually told me, they were like, Kelly, you didn't do anything wrong. Kelly, we know you're great. Kelly, don't take it personally. They were super sweet. So it was, you know, that's probably the only experience I've ever had.
Yeah. But if they don't like you, you're not going to be effective.
100%.
He physically didn't like you. I mean, he made sure he knew, or he spoke in enough Spanish or English to let you know that you are not the one for him.
Yeah, need somebody. That's fine. People don't have to like me. And if we're not going to work effectively together, then why try and force it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just shitty. Good thing. Kelly, ending on a positive note, can you talk to me about CCHI, the importance of it, and what CCHI is for the people listening?
So CCHI is the Certification Commission for Healthcare Interpreters. So I am a certified healthcare interpreter through CCHI. So I've passed both my written and oral exams with CCHI. I'm also a certified medical interpreter through the National Board of Certification for Medical Interpreters. So I'm a dual certified medical and healthcare interpreter. And currently certification is not like a requirement to be an interpreter. And I just want to say this, I want to make it clear that I'm not a representative of either CCHI or NBCMI. However, I do believe strongly in the importance of certification as interpreters. If you have a certification available, to get certified, because it raises the bar in the profession. As of right now, to become a medical interpreter, kind of like the generally accepted minimum requirements are just 40 hours of training. 40 hours of training. And that is kind of scary to me, that's all you need. And it oftentimes doesn't even include language proficiency testing. Whereas if you actually sit down for a certification exam, you've proven that you have a bare minimum level of medical knowledge, a bare minimum level of, you know, legal knowledge, knowledge of the culturally and linguistically appropriate services standards. You have ethical knowledge, which is legally required for someone to be a qualified medical interpreter. And that you also, if you take an oral exam, which at this point, pretty much all languages, interpreters of all languages can actually take an oral exam. It's actually verified your linguistic skills. Whereas a lot of interpreting companies, a lot of language service providers out there use their own proprietary tests to test people's language knowledge. And I've taken some of those tests before and they're very minimal. And that's very scary to me. So.
Oh, okay.
Kelly, thank you so much for doing this. Yes. I greatly appreciate you and I'd love to have you back again sometime. Mm-hmm. I think once Interpreter Day comes around or Translating Day comes around, before we head out, could you give everybody the deets as to where they can find you, your upcoming classes, or any other sort of relevant information as to where they can find you, get a hold of you and utilize you?
Yeah, so I am pretty much everything that you need is on my website, which is kghinterpretation.com. So that's okay. K as in Kelly, G as in girl, H as in horchata. No. what's another English? What's the NATO phonic alphabet? I don't know the NATO phonic alphabet. H is in hamster.
Oh my God, it escapes me.
Okay. Interpretation.com. And then if you go to the subscribe page, all of my information's on there.
Okay.
That's perfect. Kelly, thank you so much for this. Stick around while we just do our outro. I greatly appreciate this. Kelly Henrique, everybody just go ahead and follow her and give her a like and everything. And to everybody who's listening, thank you so much for continuing to follow us. This has been a great episode. I know that I talk about interpreting a lot on the podcast, especially when it's one of those times. But to everybody listening, go ahead and give us a like and a subscribe.
Yes.
Stay tuned for more. And if you have anybody that you'd like to see us on, go ahead and send us an email, send us smoke signals, anything that you can do, we'll definitely get it. Thank you so much.
Morse code works too.
Morse code works too. Eric knows that. He's that old.
Yep.
Thank you, everybody.